Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
She's the super cool sensation. Top 10 finisher, no hesitation. Funny girl with stats on the mind. She's a chase down, leaves rivals behind. Studying numbers, crunching stats, playing mid-season buys, mastering that. Starts slow, but he's got a plan. She's those footsteps louder as the season expands. She's those chase down, hear the sound, louder and louder as he takes the crown. She's those chase down, can't be beat in the super coach world. He's the lead. She's those chase down, hear the sound, louder and louder as he takes the crown. She's those chase down, can't be beat in the super coach world. He's the lead.
Welcome back to the Dr. Super Coach podcast, powered once again by our lovely partners at Code Sports. That's right, it is the Chiso Chase Down season. It has begun. I've got JB back with me to discuss all things post round six, mate. You've heard the intro. It's the new catchy tune of the summer, even though we're heading into the cold months of winter, mate. How are you?
I'm just confused. It doesn't actually specify what you're chasing down. Are you chasing down like a stationary object, because I'm already gone.
Yeah, no. Stationary objects like pistols rank already gone well past, so they're not part of the Chiso chase down. But I am chasing down you slowly. I've picked up 100 points in the last 2 weeks. I've only got 140 to capture.
Right, so in 4 weeks' time, you should have caught me. So in 4 weeks' time, let's reconvene and we'll see that I've actually put on 100 points in reverse.
God, I hope not.
Hey, that might mean that we're both flying. I could be ranked one and you could be ranked 100.
So here's the thing. The difference between the amount of points pistols behind me, if I had like I would be the top 200 for the same distance to the top part of the ranking. So I'm thankful that I'm towards the pointy end. We're going to be chasing it down. The Chiso chase down has begun for 2024. JB, this is going to be a bit of a rapid fire podcast because much to what Slack has been talking about today, we don't actually live together, but we're both coincidentally moving at the exact same time. And so both our houses are just stuff strewn everywhere. And stupid me, I packed up everything in the kitchen first and then realized I needed to eat. And so I had to unpack half of what I just packed up in order to be able to supply sustenance. Unpacked into the wrong house. But we're going to get through it, and hopefully by this time next week we'll be very close to set up in our new places, mate. Interesting week for the both of us. I know you had a little bit of drama. I put up a 20-15 and I came in from 6,600 to 3,700. So this is actually the fourth highest I've been in the last 10 years after six rounds. So it's actually shaping up quite well, so long as I don't run out of trades, mate. How'd your week go?
Yeah, I've still been a little bit not conservative on trades, but I feel like I'm in the better half of the competition in terms of where my trades have been spent and how many boosts and that I've got left. But I put out a 1936 this week, which is by far my worst week in terms of where that ranked in the competition, but I held rank almost essentially I'm at 1170 at the moment. So I traded into a Stewart concussion. I had a Connor Rosie 65. I had a Roel Marshall 51. Essentially, it was one of those weeks where you just see, you know, Massimo D'Ambrosio got subbed out. The list goes on of guys who just disappointed a little bit, but I'm not mad because this same group of guys has, you know, they've gotten me to this point here. So very happy still. We move on to next week where we'll be a man down with Stewart, but still upgrading. So yeah, I think team survived without Liver last week, and those without Stewart will do the same.
I hear the words. I'm not necessarily sure I believe them, that you're not mad. I vaguely remember you completely raging in game day and then not talking for like 2 hours.
I think I put it in the gaming channel that I was about to log 1,000 hours into my PlayStation because Supercoach was dead. It has been a level reaction, but I think you have these bad weeks. They're a bit of a character builder, and if you throw the toys out of the cot, then you might just not be built out for this game. But there's a lot to look forward to, a lot more fun to be had this season. So, no, I'm flying. I don't expect the chase down to happen in the next month.
Yeah, it doesn't help when I'm captaining Ryan for an 89 either. That was a big oof. I had the VC on Bont. And it turns out like the only two captaincy, I suppose, that I was considering was Butters or Bontempelli, and I missed both of them for a steal and Ryan VCC. That was a bad combo.
Yeah.
So not great. We'll go through the quick housekeeping. We do have a couple donations over to the Cancer Council. We're always thankful for donos over there. JB, from yourself, I lost a bet on stream for Dylan Moore over under 55 for round two. He's paid up. Love to see it. And if you haven't checked out JB's stream, we are going to be missing this week because we're both moving, but for the following week we'll be back underway. That's been averaging something like 120 viewers per stream, JB, which if you know anything about Twitch and streaming is like sort of unheard of. That's like 5 years worth of organic growth that you've just gotten overnight, which is fantastic.
Awesome. Also, I think the scheduling this week would probably ruin it anyway because we've got like a Wednesday night, Thursday Arvo, Thursday night, and then teams come out sort of while the Thursday Arvo game, the biggest game of the round, Essendon and Collingwood's wrapping up. So it's kind of, I don't know if I'd even get 20 there this week, but we push it to next week. I'm glad that the moving week has fallen on the same week as like a weird fixture week.
Mm. Yeah, so that we're missing lockout because we're carrying boxes. We've also got Sam, the Waddy Pod. Slack bet with BD for donate for painful things double. The bet was that Dawson would go under 105, and we all know what happened there. I also traded him out, which was brutal to watch. At least the Dons clutching victory and King Draper's antics helped relieve the pain a little. Sam, thank you for your donation. JB, we'll jump straight into it. Not an in-depth pod in terms of going through game by game and player by player. We do just want to touch on some of the big options this week. And one of the things that sort of stand out for me is that we've sort of reached that upgrade season. I know I said it was Chiesa chase down season, but it really is upgrade season. Most people would have done last week. People got Stewart last week. I got Tuk Miller last week, which wasn't fantastic. But the upgrade cadence has begun. And with that upgrade cadence, we also need some rookies to be kind of bringing in to help facilitate that turnover of cash, JB. And so one of the bigger queries we have this week, we have some options, but it probably didn't look as promising as what it did 7 days ago with the options we've got to pick from.
Yeah, it looks significantly worse. It almost couldn't look worse than projected. If you had a thought, what's the worst case scenario? We might actually be seeing it. So on surface value, it looks okay. Hugo Garcia should, you know, be back for another game. He looked good on the weekend. He was getting some CBAs, which is great. And then you've got Nyon. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Biggie. I'm going to call him Biggie from North Melbourne, who played again. He scored 88, I think, in his first game and then backed it up with a 46. Not the end of the world. Blake Drury played his second game as well. That's another bubble boy. Tunstall finally got out of the subs vest, put out a 61 for Brisbane. You've got Will Hamill technically on the bubble as well, averaging just 40, probably not ideal. And then McAuliffe as well for the Tigers. We can't forget about him coming back, hopefully, into the side this week. Has already played the two games as he was the sub in that first week. So there are options. My concern is that when you go back through those options, there are a lot of potential returning players for Garcia, who I'll go through shortly. But worse than that is I think Biggie is probably looking at getting dropped this week.
Yeah,
which will leave us with potentially just Garcia, Drury, who, as we know, from last season, isn't someone that we want to be relying on for even a position on our bench, let alone on our field. So, big concerns there. Tunstall, we know, can't get away from the subs versus that Brisbane team. You know, they've got ins and outs coming through, so I wouldn't trust him. And Hamill just hasn't been scoring. So, according to St Kilda people, Dow, Clark, Webster, Howard, Collard, Hayes, Wood, Patton, amongst others, were all at the VFL practice match playing. And then they've got Max King to return as well. So my fear with Garcia is that two or three of those guys probably become walk-up starters.
Yeah.
And, you know, that could potentially knock him back to sub. I don't think he's all the way dropped. I'm just not as confident in the asset as I was a week ago. And unfortunately, if McAuliffe and Garcia are both named, we're probably looking at McAuliffe being the best option, Garcia being maybe equal best if you don't think he's going to be sub, and then it's like a drop-off to a bunch of guys you just don't want at all. So if you went early on a guy last week, it's even worse because, you know, you're looking at potentially getting someone who is just not a great option. Like, have you had a look through these guys?
I have. I think the biggest thing for me is definitely the job security. You've touched on it a moment ago. We're going to be literally playing the team sheets. So I thought Garcia played pretty well, and Riley Garcia from the Doggies as well is probably one to talk about. Additionally, because I think he's getting his spot in sort of like a bit like McAuliffe, and the reason that you went early on him was that you were pretty confident he's going to be in the Tigers lineup for at least a couple of weeks. I feel similarly about Garcia from the Doggies. So if we see Biggie get dropped, and Biggie was fine, but watching the game, he looked like early on in his career. Didn't he? Yeah. You know, like he was kind of standing in no man's land a couple of times, and then he hurt his knee and couldn't figure out how to get to the bench. And I thought he was going to be subbed 20 minutes into the first quarter, and it was looking a little bit frantic. So if we've got the likes of Hugo Garcia named on a bench and it looks like he's going to be subbed, they've got a few names and stuff like that. You could go potentially early on a Riley Garcia.
The problem with that is that starts a bit of a trend, and
yes,
the names after Riley Garcia don't look good either. So it's kind of like we really want Riley next week. He's the only option. We are 100% going to be trading him in if he plays and is named the third week. Everyone in the competition will get him. But if you get him this week, who do you get next week? Because there's no one else. So it's just it's so scary going early on these guys, especially a Bulldog of all people. But I think we probably do get Hugo, and he's probably named, and we just go with him and go, look, if he's sub for a week and then they've got so many injury-prone players, he's probably fine and we get him anyway.
Yeah.
But it's just, I don't know, it's a lot scarier than it was.
Yeah, I think something else to mention is, like, when you're filtering by cash cows on the Supercoach site, and it's usually kind of like who's projected to go up the most in the next week and stuff like that, it sort of negates a lot of the guys, sort of like a Henry Huswaite or a Jai Clark or something like that, that are sort of at that 140, 150, 160 sort of price range that at least are playing every single week, even if they are the sub. At some point, they will escape that sub vest. That's clear that they want them to be getting game time in the AFL side. So they may be one of those really slow burns that still allow us to downgrade. But there's just not that sexy 123K rookie or 117K in Garcia's case that is just an on-field playing player that you can bank on a 40 or a 50 out of, and it's just going to really simply go up 20, 30K week to week to week. I still think that there's going to be options to downgrade to, let's say, Biggie and Garcia are out. I still think there are players that we could go to. Only 50% of the competition has Graham. I'm assuming all of our listeners have him. Same with Closey. He's only got 65 or 63% of the competition. I'm assuming that all of our listeners have. They're obvious choices as cash cows that you probably need to get regardless of if you're looking for someone else to downgrade this week. But I still think that there's going to be options poking their head up in the mid-100 range that are getting games. They're just not necessarily cash cows that are still going to allow that upgrade cadence. What are your thoughts on picking up someone like a Huswaite in order to keep that cadence going? Or is it something that it's not worth picking up one of those and you can just kind of stagnate for a little bit until someone presents?
I think definitely the cadence is important. I've sort of mapped out the week this week. So McAuliffe is the first game of the week. He's on Wednesday night. So we'll know if he's in and or sub. Now, if he's in and isn't sub, I think he's quite comfortably the guy that you just grab. And then we've got Garcia, the Saints Garcia, is Friday night. So if you've already got McAuliffe and Garcia's in and not sub Friday night, you quite comfortably grab him. And then you've got both Drury, Biggie, and the Bulldogs Garcia. So if both Drury and Biggie are in and names, then you know, you'll know in time. Worst case scenario, if all those dominoes fall, at that point I would look to go early on Garcia rather than spending up on a Huswaite. With the only thought maybe that someone like Will Hamill for Crows could be okay. But I really want to avoid the vest if I can. And you know, Clark, he can't get out of it at the moment. Huswaite just doesn't really look the guy that we saw in the preseason. So I'll be surprised if he can get out of it before, you know, the last 7 or 8 rounds of the year, which a lot of players get thrown in there when, you know, they no longer can make finals and a few of the kids start debuting and such. But yeah, I just think if you map out your week like that and, you know, you've got the McAuliffe, the Garcia, Drury and Biggie dominoes all to fall before you sort of yield and get the Bulldogs Garcia, I think that's okay. At that point, you'd go early 1 week, like you suggested, and then next week, just figure out next week. And it's a horrible cycle, but I don't think you can be trading in a guy who's A, the sub, or B, a perennial sub for more money. I think at that point, you take option C, which is going a week early.
Yeah, I see that. And there's no thoughts on getting someone like Tyler Sellers coming to his third game with a grand total of 9 points across 2 games?
He hasn't even been sub. That's impossible.
He is escaping the sub vest, mate. So he's ticking all your boxes. He's bargain basement.
Okay. He would. What's his break even? 40?
He's literally got a 49 break even.
Yeah.
As the cheapest player in the game, and he's just going to sit there.
So if he scores 48, like he doesn't go down at all, he just stays at that price, and then we go, okay, now he's reset his break even. We get him for free still. He's still on the bubble.
He could score 1, and he still won't go down in price.
Yeah.
He could score negative and won't go down in price.
He could pop a ton and only probably go up to 123K. Wow. And now he's worth looking at.
But, yeah, so but basically to sum everything up is – first of all, you're looking at the guys in the bubble like Biggie or Garcia if they are named.
McAuliffe as well, yep.
McAuliffe. You're totally drawing – your next choice would be to go early on someone like Riley Garcia from the Doggies.
Yep.
There are a few other options, but you probably don't – you're not super desperate for. What about a Conway from Geelong if they potentially might keep him as a ruck?
I hate the Conway shout. Because they said at the start of the season they would pretty much try to get him through one game a month at a time, and that's exactly what's happened. So I know, you know, he can make money, but I think he's probably got maybe 50K in him by his bye at most.
Yeah. So he's getting one more game before the buys.
Yeah, pretty much. No, genuinely, one or two games, and that's kind of it.
Yeah.
So, no, okay. I think I'd pass for 180K. At that point, you prefer Hamill or going early on someone.
Yeah. I don't think we saw enough from Jake Rogers on the weekend for the Suns. No. The one or two touches he did get were quite flashy. I remember his first touch on the half forward line, spin out of a spin out of a spin to get around three defenders and then kind of shell a ball out in the middle of nowhere.
We'd almost prefer that because we want Graham to hold his spot.
That's true. That's true, considering that. Although they were quite happy to be playing on that half forward line. So he's not necessarily overly expensive, but if he has another similar game where he puts up a 30, his break even is going to be sitting in the exact same point as what the third option, what I was going to bring up, was the Hustwaites, the Wowodens, the McRaes, Caleb Mitchells, and Jai Clarks that are all looking like losing cash, but at least have played 4, 5, 6 games, and at some point down the line they might avoid the sub. You're throwing him sort of in that mark as well, where it's like, is it even worth it at that point?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. The following weeks we're like I think every week we're seeing a debutant kind of poke their head up. Every now and then, we've got to recognize that not everyone is going to be of the same quality as a Closey or a Graham, but they're still going to be rookie options that will be coming up, and that sort of sets towards our upgrade cadence. And I think the important thing is, even if you're just playing around with names like Biggie or Garcia as potential downgrade options, we're at the sort of stage of the season where the guys that we started with, the rookies that we started with, have sort of maxed out in price and we've moved them on, and we're now getting a much better understanding of which players are likely to going to be moving out from week to week. I think up until this point, we were just sort of playing the break-evens, like whoever has the worst game, like Zach Williams, for example, this week. He just had a shocking week and now his break-even's gone up. Let's say he gets over that shopping trolley knock for those in Slack. Yeah. He is on the chopping block for us for that reason. Whereas I think we can sort of see a few weeks in advance who's going to be topping out at what point. Take Buku for me, for example. He's been consistently in the 50s. I know he's going to make likely 7K a week for the next couple of weeks, and then he's going to top out. He's been reasonably predictable. And so I can set up my upgrade path based on the players that I want to be trading out on any given week, as opposed to just waiting until lockout finishes and figure out who's got the worst break even.
Yeah, I think even if you project and something comes from left field like Zach Williams, I think it's okay to just sort of pivot. But you're getting the price points ready, and you can understand if someone does hit their ball earlier than you suspect, then you can sort of just pivot to that guy instead. Like I think I expected to have D'Ambrosio for another month, but now it's probably looking at another week or two at most. Roberts, I was looking at moving in 2 weeks, whereas he might be the last one to go now with that big score. So, and now I've sort of pivoted to Williams out instead of Cabin because they're both around a similar type of money making threshold anyway. But Williams has made a lot more. So, yeah, I think we can definitely be fluid. But yeah, don't get overly attached to the rookies that you have in your team as well. And even if you plan for someone to go out in a month's time, be prepared to get rid of them in a week's time because. Obviously, the shopping trolley accident could flare up or it could happen again. Zach Williams has obviously always been that risky. He's made over 100K, which is great. I wanted to hold him for another month. I still think he had money to make. He probably does still have money to make, but it's going to be delayed now by at least a week or two with that 33 in the price. So, I think it's just be fluid and don't get overly attached. I liked owning Zach Williams for the short time that I owned him.
Yeah. He was your original boy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he was.
I think you called a 100 average 1 year, and he went 102 or something without an injury score.
No, shut your mouth. Hold on, I gotta.
You gotta look it up.
Yeah, I do. I think it went better than that. He was really good that 1 year. This is for GWS. All right, you keep talking. I'll find this.
Well. I'd hate to say that I'm waiting for you to look it up, but I'm that intrigued. I'm started Googling myself.
Okay. Well, he had the injury
2019. Yeah, it's 102. I got his overall average.
Yeah, you did. So he missed all of 2018, and then after a 94 average in 2017, and then I jumped on him in 2019, and he was, I can't remember what price he started at, but he was a cheap boy. And then he must have had like one injury game because he was so good that year. He had a 60. I wonder if he only had 16 touches. I wonder if that was it.
I remember that. I remember we took one. We took one game out for some reason. I can't remember why.
Maybe he came out. He'd had the runs or something. Remember that year that everyone had the runs and was like tagging everyone was the most effective tagger in the game.
Yeah. So he averaged 104 without that 60 game.
I'll take it. Whatever we did that.
This is why we need Pistol. Ball. He's the one that goes, well, actually, in round four, the weather was this way in Perth where he was playing.
That's true.
This is why we need Pistol on the pod some days because he will be able to recite exactly what's happening. We've got sidetracked.
When is he back?
I believe he actually landed today. I think he landed today. Yeah, anyway, we were talking about your upgrade path and you're sort of mapping ahead of time which rookies are sort of topping out in price and which week you might want to move them on. That way you can kind of get a rough estimate of how much cash you're going to have in any given week in order to try and keep that upgrade cadence going. And so that leads us into, if we're going to keep that upgrade cadence going, we're going to have to start looking at some premium options, JB, some underpriced premium options. Again, we pay up to finish our side, but we try and find value as we're continuing to fill the premiums into our teams. And there was some underpriced guys that had some great performances on the weekend. And if you were like me and held Jordan Dawson, it didn't matter that I captained Ryan for an 89. I was just over the moon that Dawson had actually got to three figures.
Yeah, he was a big one. 168 was it in the end?
Yeah. He got scaled down.
Yeah, well, they lost the game, so checks out. He did get a lot of big points at the end there, but he had a big game, so fair enough. He was absolutely massive. That was super exciting. Even as a non-owner, like you don't wish that sort of purgatory on anyone. So I was really glad that he broke out of it. He probably didn't have to break out of it that hard. It was just the chase down as he did, but it was so good to see. But my concern with Jordan Dawson is that A, he did it at Adelaide Oval, which I don't know if you remember on the podcast said these Adelaide Oval games are really good for him. He's got a lot of them in the next run up until the bye, and then you can reassess after that. I'm glad I gave that advice and I hope people listen because that actually turned out to be very good just 1 week later. And the second thing, in terms of trading him in now, first is the Adelaide Oval thing. The second thing is the Matt Crouch thing. And I'm not a believer in the whole Matt Crouch thing, but it's becoming eerie as to how often he's scoring poorly with Crouch and well without him. So at this point, as a non-owner, you just have to – what is it going to cost you? We talked about cost in holding Dawson and everyone's like, it's going to cost you this and that and the other. It really was just going to cost you about 40K. Now we look at the cost of the non-owners not getting him this week. If he turns up, say he gets a 110, he goes to about 550K. He makes you know just under 20K. So are you willing to pay 20K to see if this is the real deal? I am, because if I pay for him this week and it's not the real deal, this is his first and only ton of the year. I don't want to sign up for that if it's not legitimate. So I would implore people to wait a week. Let the owners, I know it's North Melbourne and everyone's like, yeah, what are you going to learn from North Melbourne? I'm going to learn about his role and we're going to learn about his scoring away from Adelaide Oval, both in the same week, both in the week that I want to pick him up after. So it is going to be the perfect time. I don't care if he beats up on bad opposition because they've got a good run up until the bye anyways. And after the bye, they've got a good run all season. They barely have, you know, any of the really strong, tough teams. They have West Coast, they have Hawthorn twice, they have, you know, a lot of teams that you would expect them to go really well against. So I don't care about the opposition. I just want him to do it away from Adelaide Oval and do it with Crouch in the team. If you look at the CBAs, Rankin had like 75%. He was like a full-time CBA mid. Dawson had a good chunk. Barry had 20% before he went off injured. Saligo's getting a good chunk. Led actually took a big dip this week. I said dip, and obviously Crouch is going to step in and get a whole heap as well. So where does Dawson fall into that whole list of midfielders that they have? If it's Laird that's now sacrificing his game, we want Dawson. We want to get him in. We want to lock that in. If he's third or fourth in the CBAs, perfect. That's acceptable. That's fine. We can do it. But if he goes back down to like fifth or sixth, and I see him lining up in a forward pocket while Rankin and Saligo are running around in the midfield doing nothing, I'm not gonna invest.
Yeah, and I totally agree. The only thing that, from an owner's perspective, that I would bring up in not really a rebuttal, but just like additional information to be thinking about, is that the first 3 weeks of the year, or the first 15 quarters of the year, he had the perfect role. The only thing that was holding his scoring back was the coach believed that he was a little bit out of form, and arguably you could say that was correct. We normally think about him as a good user of the footy, and he couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat by foot. Like, he was literally putrid, and it was costing him so many points. We saw on the weekend the Jordan Dawson that we are used to seeing. So has he come back into a little bit of form, and the addition of Crouch is almost like a red herring, that he's just going to go back to that midfield role that he was earmarked to start the season with, and they were trialing him forward just to try and get some form into him potentially? But what your salient point is, even if he goes 120, he's only going up like 20-25k. That's a small price to pay to make sure that we're actually buying into something we actually want to buy. And mirroring that point, you could say the same about Jack McRae, couldn't you?
Yeah, and that's obviously the next guy on the list. Absolutely you can. And it was such a teasing week for guys that we want to be actually premiums. Like,
yes,
as a non-Jordan Dawson owner, I want him to be good. He's going to cost me 550K. If you said to me at the start of the season that I was paying any less than 620, I probably would have bitten your hand off. It's going to be 70K less than that. So I want him to turn it around and be good, because it's a bargain for me. I don't care who owns him. And it's the same with McRae. I want him to turn around because he's under 500K and we know he can go 105. The problem is that he's also been a bit of a tease, and he's done it in a week where Liberatore is out. Now, the positive that I take out of McRae's role change was that, first of all, Bevo endorsed it post-game and said, "I think we finally found the right mix for McRae," which is good. That's great. He was in and around the CBAs as much as we'd like. High half forward was coming up to the stoppages on the wing, which we like. That ticks all those boxes. We have plenty of players like that. Flanders was like that in the first 2 weeks before his role got changed. Powers is sort of like that. Heaney might eventuate to be like that anyway. So we've got plenty of those guys. That's okay. The thing is that he obviously didn't have Libet in the team, but Richards had 75% CBAs. But if I'm not mistaken, Libet has more than that. So it's just, where is that balance?
Yeah.
I'd like to find it, and I'm going to give that one definitely another week as well to be able to locate exactly where that balance is, so we can be sure of it. However, that week isn't going to cost you that much either. Let me go have a look at McRae as well while I'm here.
While you're looking that up, I'll touch on Ed Richards. As he mirrored exactly what Liberatore gets. His average for the year is 75, and yep, Ed Richards got 76. They have some spike games and they have some low games. So if you take out his 90% and his 48% that he had, he's had 74, 78, 79%, which really closely mirrors what Ed Richards has done. The interesting thing for McRae is that it seems like long-term they want him as fourth midfielder or rotating through there. It's pretty clear that he is not to be considered a starting three midfielder. The days of the high 100 averages is totally gone. But at 480K, using a magic number of 5,200, which I appreciate Bryce contacting me via Twitter during the week, which for argument's sake, that's not the exact magic number right now, but it prices him at about 92. So if we're buying a Jack McRae at 92, what do we think is the worst case scenario there? Do we really see a world where a McRae in one third of centre bounce attendances is going sub 90? I don't think so.
It's not even really the role anymore. It's the fact that he's been the sub already, and the fact that he's been in and out of that team.
Yeah, that's injury. I definitely think that's injury related.
He played 2 weeks in the VFL, so it's not exclusively injury.
Just quietly.
Bevo is just a psychopath. Like, there's no
he
other,
is.
There's
what
no other
the
way
hell?
To explain it, because I think we can all see what he's got there in a player, and I think I could have told him day one that this guy just, if you desperately don't want him in the midfield, at least playing high forward, and he'll offer something to that midfield that no one else does. It looks like he's finally figured that out, but again, you get Libba back, who I don't think is going to be a big issue, but if you do have that concern, which I personally do as well, I'll give it a week. You get Libba back, and then essentially you're going to be paying 500K. Now, if I offered you McRae for 500K at the start of the season, he started at 560, you probably would have, again, bit my hand off. And it's an extra 20K for an extra bit of confidence that the role is back to normal. However, I can understand people jumping early on this one, more so than the Dawson one, because McRae, outside of the sub game and just all the nonsense, he's finally getting a good run on 87 versus Essendon, 123 versus St Kilda in back to back weeks. I think he's probably going to kick on from here and at least go, this is the McRae that we saw go 105 last year type of thing. So
yeah,
I can definitely foresee that. Worst case, I can foresee 95, which is definitely good enough. As you said, he's priced at 90. So I think he ticks every box, and I can understand going early on him this week, as much as I can understand just waiting one more week if you're also so inclined to do so.
All right, I'm going to throw some curveballs at you now. We've talked about the best case scenario in that we want to get, let's say, McRae and Dawson prove us not wrong, but like we are premiums, pick us. And you've got to find $1 million next week worth of upgrades, over $1 million. That's going to be a really difficult scenario. And let's complicate that a little further by saying that it is very likely that next week Petrarca and Tim English are going to be pretty much at their bottom of their price cycle.
Mm. True. All true. And there's some decisions to make.
How do you feel about those names, knowing that we can't get them all next week? Is there a world where you're like, maybe I will have to take a leap of faith on one of these guys? Or are you leaning more on the fence of getting an English or a Petrarca this week even, or next week, because there's less insecurity about what their roles and performance are going to be like?
It comes down a lot to your cash generation is a big part of it.
Yeah,
and if you sort of map out your trades a little bit and foresee that you're going to be struggling in terms of cash generation, I can understand. In my opinion, I would then do McRae this week, Dawson if he looks good next week. Petrarca is going to be low enough still the week after, but even if he's not, then you've got Green.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Who's the other guy? There's another midfielder that's Steele just put out an 80 this week.
Yeah.
You'll have guys in and around that price. Took Miller's somehow staying cheap for us non-owners as well. So you've got guys around that price as midfielders, but you don't have people getting to Jordan Dawson's price. You don't have people in the forward line with McRae's upside getting to his price. Those are the guys I'd focus on. So McRae this week would be my priority. And then Dawson next week, and then figure out the midfield. If you've got better cash generation, if you look at your team and you think, I'll be able to handle Going like a one down, two up 1 week. Maybe you've still got Fife that you think is okay to switch. Harley Reid's now making bucket loads. You know, Darcy's going to make a good chunk. I could go on Closey. Obviously, we like D'Ambrosio, Roberts. There's so many guys that we can, you know, if you've got Sharp as well. If you've got a bunch of those guys and you map out your trades, there is a chance that you can, if this week, for example, I can get Petrarca and come out with enough money to do one down, two up next week, for example.
Wow. Yep.
But it's you know, I've got to plan that. I've got to, you know, look at all the money, assess everything, and that's pretty much just forfeiting the fact that I just won't get English in, you know, next week or whatever. I'll just stick with Marshall for a while. And there's going to be a sacrifice no matter what because there's like 100 guys coming around into good enough prices. It's just I don't want Petrarca to be the one that I sacrifice, especially against Richmond. But I understand he's also the one that's the worst value of that group as well. Yeah. I just think I've got the money to pay for a bit of a bad value guy at the right time of the season. So you really just have to assess what you're going to be doing in future. I recommend so many people, when they send me their teams, I always ask them, what are your trade plans? And they go, I don't know. Like, this is what I did last week. I'm not sure what I'm doing this week. And it stresses me because it's like you don't know. Like, you're going to get to a week where you're not going to be able to make any upgrades or you're going to miss a really important guy because you haven't planned ahead. And you know, that's going to hurt your rank more than picking this guy over this guy or, you know, this over this. And they're all going to average within 5 points of one another. But missing a week of upgrade cadence or missing a really important player at a cheap price, that's going to hurt you long term so, so much. So please do plan your trades. Utilize Bryce Mitchell on Twitter, who sort of posts 3 weeks of price changes in advance for all the players that you might be looking into. Go utilize him and actually map out your trades a little bit because it's so important to understand exactly where you stand with your cash generation.
Yeah, I would add to you've touched on so many good points that I'd love to expand on. When we're talking about upgrade cadence and sort of mapping out your plans, we had a great chat in Team Chizo today where we went through my spreadsheet on what I'm planning to do that goes all the way up to round 11. What rookies might be going out where, and the thing that I'm trying not to do is to cash out on guys before I necessarily have to. You talked about Mass potentially only being held for one more week. He's got a 60 and a 63 currently in his cycle. He's got a 94, an 87, and a 122 as his other scores, additional scores this year. There's absolutely the opportunity that he could put out another 85-plus score and kind of reset that cash gen just a little bit. And instead of being a 350K player that we're trading out, he ends up being a 400K player that we're trading out. Yeah. I don't want people going too early because the cash lets them do something. I'm going to trade a Matty Roberts this week because that 383K allows me to do an upgrade. I think you still have to have a long-term perspective on when he's probably going to top out. If we're looking at Matty Roberts, he had a 76 and a 69 to start the year, which is pretty good. And then he's gone 94, 98, 80, 117. So in reality, he is closer towards his average of of 90 than I would say Mass is at an 82. Like, I think Mass still has some money to make, whereas Roberts definitely still, I think, we have a lot more confidence as holding long term, obviously because of that 117. But we don't want to be cashing these guys out too early, particularly with our issues that we're having with the rookies right now. So when we're planning these upgrades, I still think that we should be cashing guys out when they genuinely have topped out in price, which I think is important. And then on the flip side, I still think that taking that the most value positive player for a worse better of terminology, JB, week to week. I still think that we should be upgrading by trying to find the most valuable or undervalued player possible. And so that would rule for me personally someone like a Christian Petrarca out because, yes, he's probably going to pop out a 140 plus against Richmond this week, but that extra 100K that I can invest elsewhere, I think at the beginning of the upgrade cadence is just so important for me.
Yeah, and it's going to be important for a lot of people.
And there's options. Tom Green has got a 180 break even right now, and yes, he's not going to be, I don't think he's going to be a Christian Petrarca, but we saw what he can do at the start of the year, and I'm definitely in the camp of, if I can get him for 550, I'm buying that every day of the week.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He's heavy, heavy, heavy on my radar as well. Yeah, look, I think it's interesting. I think some people are going to be in obviously different positions, and those who opted for Marshall instead of English a couple of weeks ago will have that extra 100K for that reason.
Yeah,
But they also have an inferior product, and you know, if you have that extra money at the end of the year that you haven't planned for, then you probably ended up, you're going to end up sideways in guys, the guys that you probably turned down 5 weeks prior anyway. So it's kind of, it's a balancing act. And, you know, it's hard to also stay steady because you look at the really good cash generation that we have, Massimo, Roberts, Sharp, Reed, etc. And those guys look amazing, but those guys were in our round one teams for a reason. I mean, Massimo wasn't, but essentially was in, because they were starting round one. They were good enough to be in their best 22. They're making money because they are good enough to be in their best 22. And now we have guys coming in, McAuliffe, Garcia, Brown, even for Richmond, and they're getting a little bit more suspicious. And those types of guys were not as confident in their job security. They might not last a month in the team. They could max out at 80K made. So don't let the good cash cows at the start of the season fool you into thinking you're going to have money for the rest of the season, because it only gets worse from here. All the good cash cows generally are there for round one because they're good enough to be there for round one. You'll see exceptions like Closey come through, obviously go 102 in his first three games, but essentially we're looking at the best cash generation now and you're trading them out. So what you said about penny pinching on those guys especially is super, super important. So I completely agree with that. You look at someone like Jeremy Sharp, who was a really good cash generator this year, 213K. People look at his ceiling of that 126 and they're like, yep, what a great pick. I think he's worth keeping. I think he's the opposite of the guy that you want to keep. He's now made 213K. He's break even 72. He's only scored above 72 literally once this year for that big spike score at Adelaide Oval. I would absolutely jump off of that now. And as much as I think he's been a great contributor, he could be a decent score on field, you know, for a good 65 to 70 most weeks. You've made your money now. Jump off him. You can't get any more out of him and move on to the next guy and save your Massimos and your Roberts and such who still have 50-plus K to make.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And that was sort of where I was leaning with the Roberts and the Massimos, where their overall average sort of reflects a lot better towards what their performance might be. Whereas I think with Sharp, he's gone 70, 63, 71, 54, 67, and a 126 in there that's blowing his average sort of out of the water. So if you're taking like his average, his true average being around the 70 mark instead of 75, he's really got not that much cash to make, you know what I mean? So it's not like that once this this week's over and that high break even, it's not really going to disappear. You need to predict another spike score. And he's gone 5 out of 6 games, really consistent in the mid-60s, you know? So he's an example that we're not cashing in early, unlike a Roberts, because when you look at the totality of performances, he is kind of priced currently where his overall performance is going to be. And I think you're a brave person if you're predicting another spike score. But JB, that was a really wide and in-depth discussion across a number of topics. So I really appreciate that, man. We're going to jump over to some podcast questions just to
I ask one more? Sorry.
Shoot.
Just Sammy Walsh. I just want to quickly get your take on Sammy Walsh because he's obviously going up in price this week. He was priced at the start of the year at 575K. I know you're a big Walsh fan. I want to know what you think is the trade-in option of Sammy Walsh this week, because a lot of people are flocking after those two big scores to start.
I can see why they're flocking after him. It's why he was, when we were constructing our side before we knew about the early buys and such, and him also being injured, he was, along with he and Took, were in the beginning of our sides. Like there's no denying the fact that we want to own Sammy Walsh because he's going to be a 115 plus averaging midfielder when he plays. The issue that I have is the injury history over the last 18 months has been quite extensive. We haven't seen the full Carlton midfield all playing together and seeing the impact that that has. And so I would love to wait a week if possible, or pick someone similarly priced that probably doesn't have the injury history that he does. The counter to that, JB, is that sometimes you have to take a risk and you have to take a punt and you have to back your gut, because if you don't get him this week, he's going to be too expensive to get. And so if you genuinely believe in Sam Walsh and you understand the risk that you're taking on and you think that it's worth taking that risk, the upside is there, and you know that he could, that back injury could flare up at any moment and you're out, just like trading in someone like Stewart could just suddenly get concussed without warning, and you're willing to take it, then I understand that, because if you don't get him this week, I don't think we're paying 620K as our next upgrade next week. I think we're still going to be penny pinching. We're still going to be looking for Tom Green at 550. We're going to be looking at Petrarca at 570, which all present exceptional value. This one week only is Sam Walsh potentially showing the most value, or close to the most value as a midfield upgrade.
Yeah, no, I do agree. I agree. We're in the same boat here. Last year, Sam Walsh started the season with a 104, 130, 117, 106, 117. He looked great. He had back issues last year as well. He had two goals in those opening five games. That was six games I wrote out, six games. And, you know, he looked incredible. He had 38 touches in that second game. So pretty much what we're seeing here a little bit, you know, those of those first six games, he had a 10-tackle game, an 8-tackle game, a 7-tackle game. But I just feel like as the season progressed, his back injury sort of caught up to him a little bit. And then as their midfield sort of molded around itself, you saw players like, you know, Hewitt in and out of the side, Chera was in, Cripps was in, Walsh was in, Kennedy was in and out. They have so many guys in and around that midfield. His scoring sort of dipped back a little bit. So from that opening six rounds, he went 92, 105, 72, 93, 108, 99, 119, 87, 109, 90. And that was the rest of his season. Now, it's the exact same this season as it was last season. He missed the first four rounds of the year. This one, I suppose, was five for them. They had opening round. But essentially started the year in round five each time. He started a lot hotter this time round. Obviously, the 166 and the 130 now, two you know, massive games where he was best on ground, I think, for them. But both games at Marvel, both games against, you know, opposition midfielders that have been easy to score against. Was he in our teams because we thought he was finally fit again? Yes. We saw him in the finals. He went 111, 134, 121. He looked like the old Sam Walsh again. Carlton were winning. I remember that, especially that semi-final against Melbourne where he had 34 and kicked two goals. I was like, oh my, how can we not start Sam Walsh? And the answer was injury. We didn't start him because of injury. And now he's come back and he still has that same injury history. That's eight games, actually nine games, including opening round, that he's missed out of the last potential 30. So to me, it's just, I don't want to subscribe to this back injury. I don't want this to flare up later. I don't want Chera to come in and affect him. I'm more than happy for people to dive on this pick and you know, go to it in hordes, because I don't think he's a 120 plus guy. I actually think he's had his best two games of the season just about. So for me, I don't get those points in. I know he's a, you know, he's a juicy price, 575, but I think there are guys around that, for example, a Nick Martin type, who I know is going to be top 6 to 8 in his line. I don't know anything about Walsh and how he finishes the year and what he does with Chera and the team. So I'm a hard pass.
I I'm not a hard pass. I can see how you get to that because there's no denying that Sam Walsh is the guy when he's fully fit. There is no denying that we all want
him. He's no Connor Rosie, but...
True. That's true. He would never put up a 60 in an important game. But if you look at his... sorry. If you look at... This is the one... But this is the way I'm approaching it. If I've got someone that says, I want Walsh, I understand the risk, I'm going to get him. I go, sure, this is probably one of the cheapest points that we're going to get him this season. If someone says to me, I have all of these issues with picking the pick, I don't like Chera, I don't like the back, blah, 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 I'm also not going to say, nah, you need Walsh. I am absolutely – the other thing that's tipping me in this end of the scales, he played Adelaide in round 5. Midfield hadn't clicked yet. Technically still hasn't. Round 6, played GWS, missing Cornelio. Not exactly their full-strength midfield. But then look at the run until the buys. He's got Geelong, basically top of the table. Collingwood, found their mojo again. Melbourne, tough lineup. Sydney, tough lineup. Gold Coast, tough for midfielders to score. Port Adelaide, also another tough lineup. And then they've got Essendon before he has his bye. He really only has one game in there that you would say, I expect a 115 plus. Like as in, I expect it to happen. There is 6 consecutive tough midfield or team matchups that if you are even remotely cautious about picking him this week should indicate to you that, you know what, I'm probably actually, you know, if my intuition is correct, at the buys, he might only be 600K. And so, like, is it worth getting an extra month and a half worth of data and picking him up off his buy for the benefit of, you know, he's not going to be a 130 averaging player. I mean, we could absolutely be wrong and he is that guy and we're all scrambling to get him in 2 weeks. Or he's completely, sorry, he's priced us out and we'll never get him, simply. But I think I lean on the side of the fence that by the time that it's his buy, he will still be at an attainable price, but right now is probably his most underpriced, if that makes sense, JB.
Yeah, and I also want to sort of point out, so listen to these projected scores and don't worry about the matchups or anything like that, but just listen to the numbers. So he is projected by the site, which obviously is complete blowny. We're not saying anything about that. It's not going to happen. These aren't, you know, scores that... Anyway, listen to these projected and tell me where you think they're unreasonable. So he goes 132, 125 in the next two, 102, 110, 108... 116, 110. And that gets him to his buy. With that scoring, he's 600K flat.
Yeah.
So it's not like, unless he keeps up this, and that's even with these this 166 and the 130 and these, you know, to start, that gets him a big rise this week. But that price range is really difficult to maintain. And we've seen it already with everyone in the game so far. Pretty much every player has dipped to around 600K besides like Butters, Bont, there might be another one in there, but like essentially almost everyone has done it now, including now English will do it. So it's, you know, Merritt is the other one I was thinking of. You know, you look at these guys and I don't think he's going to suddenly be in that echelon of player. So I think he's going to be affordable. He might not be this affordable, but I think it's worth waiting to see. And for 575, you're just inheriting so much risk.
Yeah.
But like you said, it is a choose-your-own-adventure. If you love what he's bringing, if you think he looks rejuvenated, the back won't flare up, you know, he's had his time off, etc. I'm not going to talk anyone off the pick. It's just not for me. So if people... I know a lot of people after the podcast message and say, you know, why this, why that? Why aren't you going this guy? I'm not going him personally. I agree with you. I'm not going to talk anyone off of him, but that's why he's not for me.
Yep. Yep. I agree. We'll jump into the podcast questions now, JB. Last chance to bring up any final players. All right. Good, good, good. we have a question here. The Jordan tag was very effective on Noah Anderson on the weekend. Do we think the Swans will become a problem team and start avoid VCing and seeing against them? JB, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so you mentioned Walsh's run, which I think this is kind of interesting because using Jordan as a tag on like an outside player like Norah Anderson, I think is kind of interesting. And even if you're not considering it for VC/C, I think it you sort of start tempering your expectations a little bit. I don't think they do it against every team, but I think they're going to be up in that conversation with the really difficult to score against midfields, which I think we are considering Brisbane have been so far, Carlton have been so far, and I think Sydney have been to an extent, but probably increase that as well. So I do agree with the take, and I think it's a really it's a really clever thing to now put on people's radars. For example, though, Sydney have GWS next week. I'm not really looking at the Hawthorn matchup this week because who cares, but they have GWS next week. I don't expect him to go to Tom Green or anything like that and stop him. But if he's running with someone outside of stoppages, maybe it's a Josh Kelly or someone like that, not relevant to our Supercoach teams, but eventually it will be. So I do kind of think that's worth putting on the radar as, you know, they've got Fremantle the week after. I don't know who that looks like, but essentially I do think it's worth considering and monitoring over the next 2 weeks to see if they continue to do it.
Yeah, I think it's also one of those things where Jordan may put attention into specific types of players. There's a reason why he went Norah Anderson and not Took or Raoul, who
yeah, absolutely
typically a little bit more inside. I mean, Norah Anderson has got a pretty complete game. But when you compare, let's say, the Carlton midfield, you've got Chera, you've got Walsh, and you've got Cripps in there. Cripps is a row. You're not going to send someone to him. Chera is less damaging, so you could, and has a decent balance. He's very comparable to Took in this scenario. And who's the guy that is happy to go inside but also gets 60% of his possessions on the outside? That's a Sam Walsh. He seems like a perfect person that you could send a James Jordan to and put some effort into. He's got the Swans in round 10.
Sam Walsh, a Nick Dacos, Zach Butters,
yep,
those types of players that I can sort of see them looking into a little bit more.
Even a merit in many respects. I know they it's not I'm not necessarily saying that it's something that owners of merit need to look out for, but it's that type of player that are happy to go inside or outside, but they get the majority of their ball. Over half of their ball is going to be an outside type player. So it's definitely one just to keep an eye on. It's
worth having on the radar.
Kieran has, is now the time to trade Luke Jackson? JB, I could trade him to Dale and it frees up 100K as it looks like Jackson's going to be losing some cash. Is it not worth doing due to the dearth of forwards?
Well, for the love of God, do not trade to Bailey Dale because I've had a question about him as well, and someone was saying they didn't have the money to go all the way up, and I'm like, well, just don't trade, please. If that's the case, either find the money or don't trade. Bailey Dale is not the answer to your question, but I mainly earmarked this one because I know he's obviously had a different role so far, but he's scoring so far 113, 178, 98, 91, 72, 90 this week. That doesn't strike me as a forward of all people who's covering my ruck line as someone that I want to trade out. Now, I know he's going down in cash, but by golly, I'm looking at trading him in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah. So cash doesn't matter if
you're
not.
It doesn't matter if you hold him.
If you're holding him.
And he's a forward. I think he's going to go 85-ish without Darcy. When Darcy misses his next set of games, it's not even an if anymore, when he misses his next set of games, you get some spike scores. And if one of your two ruckmen who you currently have misses a game, you've got really safe, good cover. So, I think Luke Jackson, I know you started him probably for a cash grab. It didn't work out that way because the scores after the spike score, he had two real low scores and then they sort of dangled the Darcy carrot out for a couple of weeks. I get that. But at this point, you've got him holding for the season. You've got a forward keeper. Probably one over other people because, you know, not many people have forward keepers at this point. So definitely a hold. I just wanted to talk on Jackson sort of for a little bit to say hold firm.
Yeah, I agree. And our final question from Brad. If you held Colby McKercher, is he now a long-term hold until he has regenerated some cash? And I'll just quickly say my thoughts, JB. Why is this a question this week, Brad? This was... our logical reason for keeping him last week. He was not going to be regenerating cash until round 10, sort of at the earliest. Like, if everything went to plan, he'd get back to the same price as he currently is. Now with a really poor score in his cycle, I don't think anything's changed. I think you are holding him for the long term on the proviso that he was going to be a decent on-field option. His change of role into the midfield has come with his lowest scores, as he's not getting that cheap ball out of the back line. We've talked, Alistair Clarkson said they might be thinking about moving Sheasel around, yada, yada, yada. Maybe a role opens up across that half-back line again for McKercher. I think that Clarkson's going to be smart enough to kind of throw him somewhere that he's going to get a decent run and kind of build some form again. But it all boils down to, if you weren't getting rid of him last week, you were planning on holding him for the long term. So it's not really something that should be just striking you now.
Yeah, I only circle this one to sort of just stress again that you need to be planning in advance. Look at the score. Understand the three-round rolling average. As soon as someone gets a really bad score in their price range, in their price cycle, you're holding them 1,000,000% for at least the next 2 weeks, because they're probably dropping for at least one of those. So
yeah.
And even if they drop for one and make money for the other, they're probably coming out to where you had them 2 weeks ago anyway. So if you believe in the rookie, which clearly you must have a week ago, or you just didn't quite clock the situation, they're both okay. They're both fine reasons to have held him. But now, yes, you're in for the long haul. I just want it to at least be a lesson to anyone else listening and yourself, Brad, that you just need to look, you need to get into your crystal ball, have a look, project what these guys are going to do, understand the scoring system and the price-changing system, that it's going to, one bad score is going to stuff them around for a couple of weeks. It's the same with Zach Williams. I think overall Zach Williams probably does make another 50K from this point, but now it's probably going to take 4 weeks instead of two. And am I willing to wait 4 weeks? No. So should I even wait 1 or 2 weeks? No, it's not going to make any difference. So in that instance, it's kind of, you know, you just jump off when you want. And
yeah,
with Colby, he had 100 break even. The time to jump off was last week. Now you're sort of committed to holding him till he's buy. And, you know, you might be selling for 40, 50K less at his buy, but at that point, you've signed up for the long run. And we know that he's got the talent to get back up there eventually. So yeah, you just got to, players need to use a little bit more foresight in this instance.
Yeah. And I think with the likes of, let's say, a Sharp or a Williams being a bit more front of mind this week, you are looking at moving on some other guys. I guess the thing with McKercher, JB, is that if you're not trading him this week, you are pretty much committed to holding him until all of your other cash cows have sort of been traded, because by the time he starts regenerating, you've needed to do like 4 or 5 downgrades at that point. And if you're not doing it this week, you're not doing it next week. And if you're not doing it next week, you're probably not doing it the week after, as he's slowly resetting that break even. So I think at this point, you're just kind of hoping that he becomes that reliable on-field scorer again, or at least a loopable option.
Yeah, look, he's got defensive midfielder eligibility. He started the season with 88, 95, and 74. We know that role sort of gone a little bit to the leeway in the last couple of weeks. He was playing midfield. Is he incapable of getting those scores still? Absolutely not. He's dropped 45K in the last 2 weeks, which is just tragic. He's now only made 49K for the season. I just look at his price and I think I wasn't even trading Cadman for that, and I wasn't sure he'd make much more. I definitely didn't trade Darcy for that. I've still got him. I'm going through the players. Like, we're not trading Closey for that. We're not trading Brown for that. D'Ambrosio. Like, you look at all these guys and they've all made so much more money. You're probably just prioritizing other guys ahead of him now and hoping that he just has a couple of like, he's only 2 weeks away from having a negative break-even. 275 to 80 scores, and his break-even is negative. Yep. So you just root for that now.
Yep. No, I love it. JB, I appreciate you finding time in your busy house-packing schedule to sit down and do a podcast with me. A little bit of a rush, but I hope that we still broke it down and everyone enjoyed. I'm running out of steam here, mate. If you want to find us on all the socials, you know where they all are at this point. It's episode 312. We love you all. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you have a good week. We'll catch you all in the next episode.
She's always on the move, can't be stopped. Like a freight train, opponents drop. From a shaky start to a mighty roar. She's always chased down, leaves some wanting more. Calculating moves with precision and grace. His rivals tremble as we see his pace. But every round his lead extends. She's always the one all his rivals commend. She's always chased down. Coach World, he's elite. She's all chased down, hear the sound, louder and louder as he takes the crown. She's all chased down, can't be beat in the Super Coach World.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.